The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Bigfoot North with your hosts, Todd Standing and Dr. Jeff Meldrum. Our show explores the remote, unknown wildernesses of the world to discover new species of relic hominids, considered by many to be the most man-like primates on the planet. Now, here are the hosts of Bigfoot North, Todd Standing and Dr. Jeff Meldrum.
Good day, everyone. I'm Todd Standing.
I'm Jeff Meldrum.
And today we are going to get right into it like we always do with our with a special guest today. The way it all started out was a few years ago, my Cree Nation's elder, he helped me a lot with the wilderness and survival training and a little bit to do with the Sasquatch phenomenon. But I was always on him about what can I really do? What can I do to move forward and have really good success with this? And he always told me that it was, I needed a female. I needed a woman. You know, it's big burly men out in the wilderness, and I believe it's mostly male Sasquatches that I interact with. So I knew a long time ago that I had to get a female personality involved, and then even looking into the Leakey's Angels and Diane Fossey and Jane Goodall and all these female primatologists that in the field have such great success, I knew that it was going to be really important to get that. And about 3 years ago, I met this person who just turned out to be phenomenal and amazing, and she's with us today. Her name's Sonia Zohar. And say hello, Sonia.
Hi there.
And so we're talking to her today. So, Sonia, I guess you're a California girl. You're, you've got that. You went to Berkeley. You've got a. You took some philosophy there. What got you into? Why did you want to come into this whole realm of Sasquatch?
Well, I think there's an irony to it. You know, when I was younger, I was really open minded about a lot of things in life, and I don't think I would discredit anyone if they had a story about something that happened to them, like a ghost or even a UFO. Not that I necessarily think I believe in those things, but more that if someone said something, I really wouldn't dismiss it. I just thought, okay, all right. Except for Sasquatch, because growing up the way I grew up, my dad was in the military. We used to drive across the United States, and when you drive across the U.S., you find these little spots that always have some sort of touristy thing, attraction. And I kind of was a little bit jaded to that. And in the Southeast U.S., there's a thing called the jackalope, right? And as a kid, I knew that that was just some sort of ploy to get you to buy candy and stop at their sites and different things. And some things were real, and some things like, you know, the 10,000-year-old petrified forest and different little things like that. So when I was camping with my grandparents up in Northern California, and we would drive through Willow Creek, and there's this big, huge wood carving of a Sasquatch. Well, my 8-year-old mind just decided that was just one of those places that wanted you to stop. And so I never really gave it any credibility, which is the irony is the fact that, in college, I did study philosophy. I studied a lot of different things, but really my favorite subjects were anthropology. And Diane Fossey and Jane Goodall were heroes of mine, but I'd had this idea growing up that all the great mammals and all the great primates had been studied, and there were no more adventures in that realm. And so I chose the course of study that I did, and I'm very happy with that. But I just never really foresaw myself going into the field because people were already doing that, and it wasn't like an adventure necessarily. And I looked up to Jane Goodall and Diane Fossey and read National Geographic, and any time that there was an article on primates or any type of large mammal, I would read it. I just grew up that way, and I loved it, and I've always loved animals and nature. And then, one day I was watching a show in Los Angeles, and there was a gentleman, it was a Bigfoot show, and one of the gentlemen on the show said he would stake his 20-year career that he had dermal ridges that would prove that there was an undisclosed non-human primate in North America. And I literally, to me somehow, it almost was like I won the lottery. For 3 months, I couldn't stop talking about it. I couldn't stop researching it. I couldn't stop thinking about it. You know, I was ready to quit my job and move up to the Pacific Northwest and go out and Bigfoot search, you know. And then I actually started looking into the reality of that and being a woman and knowing that I'd get to go out and be by myself and all the survival skills necessary. And although I'm a good hiker and a good outdoors person, the whole thing seemed to be daunting, but nevertheless, I still pursued, a way to get myself out there and to really research this. And that's how, actually someone had sent me, in all my enthusiasm, someone had sent me, some of your information, Todd. And, that's when I think I started emailing you and bugging you. So it is kind of funny, that I would end up looking for Sasquatch when I dismissed it as a child as something not real. And then end up here doing this. And I'm so excited and so amazed. And the things that we have discovered and seen have been just more than I thought ever possible. And it is the big adventure that I've always wanted in my life. And I like to be able to create the type of energy that Jane Goodall has created with the chimpanzees, with the Sasquatch. That would be ideal. Fantastic. So that's kind of the short story long of how I got involved and why.
Very cool. Jeff, did you have a question, Jeff?
Well, I just was curious that in our conversations, you know, there's been mention of how to describe your particular interest and affinity to animals, and maybe you could describe for us a little bit about how you have cultivated a special sort of relationship, a special type of affinity to animals, how do you see that playing a role?
Well, that's really interesting, and that's something that's I think we're all given a gift when we come into this earth, and mine has been with non-human animals. It's something that's very special for me. Something that I really don't talk too much about it. I think it's something that I'm very humble about, because I do see it as a great gift. And I just came into this world not afraid of non-human animals in any sort of way. Matter of fact, I used to kind of freak my mom out because I was always picking something up and bringing it home. And sometimes those things weren't necessarily like things that you want your children to bring home, like snakes and lizards. And I was always rescuing animals and finding animals that were hurt and taking them in. And I just was never afraid to approach an animal. And that actually got me in trouble sometimes in life. I've been bit and I've been attacked. I, a very small child, I wandered into someone's backyard to pet their German Shepherd, who completely attacked me. And it was a guard dog, and I didn't know. I was a kid. And I just wanted to play with the dog. And I was able to get away. I was actually pretty smart about it. I remember just rolling away and kicking and knowing that I could get away because the dog was on a chain. But the fascinating thing about that, you think being a young child and being really severely attacked, I was bleeding and whatnot. You know, I never really blamed the dog. What I learned from that was, oh, maybe I should find out if the dog's friendly before I go into somebody's yard. And the point is that this relationship is that I didn't get, like, afraid. And a lot of children, if you talk to even adults now, like, oh, once I was attacked by a dog, and then that's it for them. Like, dogs are the bad thing on the planet, and they're terrified of them. They live with that fear. And even in my very young mind, I never blamed the dog. I realized that maybe I should listen and be alert to my surroundings and what the animal is like before I proceed. And from there, it just created this ability to sit back and listen and read and be present with non-human animals in such a way that they just have an affinity for me. But they always, you know, sort of had, and I always had an affinity for them. And so it's a combination of both, of that skill set of not having the fear, and it's also the ability to listen and to observe. And I've had the greatest success and reward with non-human animals. If I could just start with the stories, you know, it's like I am actually that person that someone will walk up and say, oh, my dog bites after the dog's sitting on my lap. You know, like that's, and I'm like, oh, he does? Oh, okay. But at the same time, you know, like I said, I learned to be cautious because, you know, you can just walk by a car and you can know if you can put your hand in and pet the dog that's sitting in the car or not. And some dogs you can't. And that's all there is to it, and that's fine. Not every animal needs to take to you, but it's that patience, kind of, and that listening. And they're aware of it. In my opinion, they're aware of that as well, and they will, if you acknowledge them at that certain level of that type of awareness, they acknowledge you. And just as we're sitting here, I'm sitting, you know, in my house right now, and I have a lot of deer in the area, and I realize this is like part of it. You know, when I come home at night and I see the deer, I talk to them and just say hi to them. And now they don't run. You know, I've been living in this area for years now, and they're all just quite comfortable with me. And literally a deer just walked maybe within 15 feet of me. And I'm at my desk and my windows are open, and she looked up and saw me. And when I first moved into this area, of course, that would not have happened. But it's that acknowledging them and allowing them their space to be what they are, and be in a sort of position of being humble, patient, and reverent. And somehow they pick up on that. And then they're more relaxed. It's a really interesting process, and I do think it's available to everyone, but I do think it's a special ability to just listen and be still with them and get to know them on their terms. And I think that's the key. Most humans, we talk at people and we talk at animals, thinking that they will bend to our will, and that's just not the case.
Well, that's enormously what I'm looking for in my success, is I want to understand what I'm doing right, what I'm doing wrong, and how I can proceed forward in the matter of Sasquatch. A little bit of background on Sonia is she's been out to all the research sites I've been to in the last 3 years, and in the beginning working with her, I mean, I've always been really skeptical. She'll tell you in the beginning, too, it took her a long time to convince me because expeditions I do are very dangerous. And do you remember the first emails and the first things that I told you, Sonia, when you were interested in coming out with me?
Oh, it was sweet and funny, and I wasn't daunted, but obviously, because we did end up working together, but when I approached Todd, you know, Todd made it very clear that what he does is really dangerous, and that and the places, it's not just, it's not even just approaching or being in the space of the Sasquatch. That's a whole nother level. It's just being in these places where there are mountain lions and grizzlies, and you know, you're out there hiking in all different types of climates. One of the places where we were in the morning, there were wolf tracks, you know, and not far from camp. And so, you know, you're really out there. And so he was like, Todd was like constantly like, do you know how dangerous this is? I'm not taking you out there, you know, and do you have any idea? And I listened and I appreciated that. And at the same time, I was, like I said, not daunted, because, that's the other thing. Even in the wild, when I've been hiking, if there's a good animal experience to have, I've always had it. And again, that's part of the gift.
But just not with grizzly bears and black bears, please. If we see them, we're not having any. It just play the game by the rules that are already out there. No experiences with them, please. So it's not what I consider fun whatsoever. So Sasquatch stuff. Why don't do we have time? Let's get you talking about Sasquatch. How about some of the stuff? So in the United States, I took you on an expedition there. Had some pretty profound success and made me a deep, wholehearted believer in what you were capable of. I was astounded. I was actually having no success, and so was the person who was in this particular research site in the United States. So we needed help because we were getting less and less results with the Sasquatch groups that we knew were in the area. So we brought Sonia in, and within a matter of days, well, even tell us about the whole expeditions, the things you saw, the from tree breaks to tracks to everything that you experienced. So tell us a little bit about that, please.
Well, and we'll back up really quick, though. I do want to mention, though, that, and that was a test. You know, that was one of the first places you brought me, because they had been maybe not having so much success, and you're like, okay, well, if you have this, you know, this talent or this ability with non-human animals, let's see it. Let's see what you can do. And so you brought me out to this place, and you know, we went into the woods, and again, it's that same kind of experience, that humbling, that listening, and looking. And there's a part of it, too, you know, I must confess, and I was thinking about this today, too, you know, I also, my whole life, have been like a little bit of a treasure hunter. Even when I shop, I don't want like what everybody else has. I want to find the one thing that nobody has. And so there's that kind of energy behind it as well. So you go into the woods and, you know, there's a part of me that is desiring that experience that not many are having, because it's like a treasure hunt. And so, yeah, you put me in this in this wilderness where we did hear cougars. The cougar got a kill right not far from where we were. And then you wanted to see what I could do, and so I went into the woods, and I talked, I said a lot, I said my thoughts aloud, I made myself known, and then you were wonderful explaining the evidence, and I found my first track out there, and. And then, you know, as we started to do that, we started to have experiences. The more you let me in on their behavior patterns and their evidence, like when you've been out with Jeff and you guys look at the different evidence of their being there, I would extrapolate on that and move in the forest and talk about it aloud so that I was heard and that I was seen. And actually experience it like they were experiencing it, like running on the fallen logs. When we were talking about different noises that you could possibly hear out there. And so, you know, part of that was me, you know, playing and behaving in a way that maybe they would play and behave. And a lot of, like I said, making myself known in the area, talking and being very open to an experience with them. And so, yeah, we did have experiences.
say the least, I'd actually never even, you know, I read a lot of stuff about what people have experienced with Sasquatch and different kinds of sightings that they allege. I'd never even heard of what I saw Sonia do, where she actually had them come in, and it was totally amazing. It blew my mind. It actually reminded me of primatologists that I've visited at the Calgary Zoo, where they have gorillas. I thought it was odd. It's women. It's almost entirely around the gorillas that are doing stuff with them. and they're coaxing them in and out of their enclosures and whatnot. And it's a woman that can have that gentle voice that goes, hi, you know, like I can't do that. I sound ridiculous doing it. It's very not authentic. And I do feel it is the males that are coming around. And once it started happening, and another great thing for me, one of the most exciting things for me was I could step back and just watch over Sonia and film it all happen. It's not me out there with the camera taking on this subject, and having her out there and being just, for lack of a better term, you know, naked to have that success, not worrying about the camera, not worrying about having a gun on your hip or defending yourself or anything else like that. That's my job, is to take care of her and keep her safe. She can just go out there and have the experience and know that if anything happens with a grizzly bear or a mountain lion or a charging moose, I'll take care of it. The other thing that Sonia's very clear of is if a Sasquatch latches on her, and remember, I come from the perspective that I know this species is real, and she gets very close to them, and she's done it on multiple occasions. If a Sasquatch latches on her and runs off, what happens, Sonia?
Tom, maybe we can pick that up on the back end of the break. We're up against a break here.
Okay, yeah, let's get to that when
that's
we come
a good,
back.
A good segue there. Keep our audience awesome, in suspense.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
The Complete Sylvanic Collection is an online download featuring videos, stills, chronicles, and audio collected by Todd Standing. It is an enormous collection of some of the most significant evidence ever recorded. Visit Sylvanic.com or BigfootNorth.com to see these downloads, video footage, and to find out more about Todd's work. You can also find the Bigfoot North products for sale in the online store. Our sightings are just the beginning. Visit Sylvanic.com or BigfootNorth.com and see what you're missing.
The Jane Goodall Institute is an organization dedicated to continuing to protect critical habitat for chimpanzees and other great apes in Africa. To work with and empower African communities to improve their lives, and to encourage young people around the world to take positive action for the planet. Go to janegoodall.org to sign a petition, get educated, and help to ensure great apes have a future on our amazing planet. That's janegoodall.org.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Bigfoot North. If you have a comment about our program or a question for Todd Standing or Dr. Jeff Meldrum, please send an email to info@BigfootNorth.com. That's info@BigfootNorth.com. Now, back to the show.
So we'll take off right exactly where we left off with the question of, again, it's my job to keep Sonia safe and make sure that the survival skills are up to par and the wild animals question is answered. But I am armed now when I go out into the wilderness, but I will never, ever draw my gun on a Sasquatch for the number one reason, because I wouldn't survive if I was to shoot at one. And that's something I don't even feel like I firmly believe it. I know without a doubt that when a Sasquatch or a group of Sasquatch come around me, if I was to draw my weapon and fire upon one, the First Nations people have taught me this, and I've substantiated it by my research, that you will not survive. So I always talk about that profoundly. There's just no way you can't take on a species that can track this well. That they're like living, breathing X-Men in the wilderness. They're so strong, they're so fast, they're so amazing at what they do. So Sonia is very aware of this. So again, we'll lead into that question, Sonia. What happens if a Sasquatch latches on you? What am I going to do?
Well, this is where you know there's that part of life that faith comes in. So if one latches on to me and takes me, there's nothing we can do. I'm gone, and we know that. Mm-hmm. And we know that because there's not anyone in the world as of yet that successfully tracked and captured one. You know, right? So we know mm-hmm. that they are what their name their namesake. They are the masters of the wilderness. Mm-hmm. With that said, one parallel, I've done quite a bit of research in folklore and stories and retellings and encounters. And what I found, I'll tell you how I feel about this. What I found is about 30% of Sasquatch encounters have a negative connotation. 70% are positive. The myths and the stories that you hear about Sasquatch from the First Nation peoples parallel the myths and the stories that you hear from African tales of the gorilla, the mountain gorilla, and the lowland gorilla. One, that they snatched women, and two, that they snatched children. Now, those were big myths and tales before there was a scientific discovery of them. I don't know that gorillas would snatch children. I do know that chimpanzees do, and they will, and it's a territorial issue. If you encroach on their territory, they do not want you having birth. So necessarily how that would work is if you're encroaching on a chimpanzee's territory and then you start having babies, they will take your babies. And there are many species of mammals that do this. Lions and hyenas do it. They can't stand each other, so they steal each other's babies. It's not uncommon. I even just recently saw a show where the lion went in, even though they're not directly competing with one another, but a lion went in and killed not only the mother, the cub, but the mother of a cheetah, and didn't eat it. So it's a territorial issue. With that said, you know, it's a possibility. I think the women snatching is more of a myth. I think the child snatching could be more of a possibility, just based on the behavior of other mammals. But the truth is we don't know, and we don't know what's going to happen when we get really, like, that kind of close, when I'm within an arm's reach of one. And that's the leap of faith, and that's where I really do feel strongly. I think in life, I would hope in life, every human gets to a point where you can start to look back on your life and start to have some faith about who you are and how you experience your world. And I'm not going to say that something couldn't go wrong, but based on results of what's happened in my life until now with non-human animals, I'd feel like that I would be pretty safe. I don't feel like that necessarily I would be taken or hurt. But again, it is a possibility. It's not something that I don't think about. And it's not something that I'm not aware of. And that is what, you know, that's the fear factor in this whole adventure, right? They have surrounded people before. They have chased people out of the woods. You know that firsthand, Todd. You know that they can get angry. Yes. You know that they can get angry. But the actual, like, tales or evidence that they've actually hurt humans is not as prevalent as the other, that they've actually just walked away. So, you know, it's a factor, for sure.
So, Sonia?
Yes.
Sonia, maybe I remember I got just a few little snippets around the campfire in the few days that we were together out there of some of your experiences. To what extent did you have interactions or any encounters in your in those initial expeditions with Todd in the States?
Well, I think Todd has some things he wants to, I don't know, Todd, what would you like me to say about that? Because I know that I definitely had an experience. I definitely had one that was probably within, I would imagine, less than 15 feet of me. Yep. I definitely had him talking. And I earnestly had a very good feeling about it. I did not feel that the energy coming at me or the tone was at all aggressive. Matter of fact, it was quite endearing. However, when we were in Canada, Jeff, I know you know that I had a different experience.
Right, right. And I didn't appreciate or wasn't around to know how intense that experience was, actually, and how much it lingered with, stayed with you.
Right, and I didn't know either. You know, I had no clue that it would actually have such an impact. And it is one of the things that I use as a gauge now for when I do listen to other people recount their tales and their experiences. When some people mention the amount of fear that they experienced, I am more likely to believe and think that there is definitely some validity to what they're saying, because I honestly, in all my life, I don't think I've ever experienced such fear as I did when we were together, Jeff.
I can recap a little bit. So, I mean, we had a really good positive experience in Montana. Again, there's a lot of intricate details that are all in the film that we'll talk about that you'll see in the production Bigfoot North at length. And then Sonia was there the whole time for Jeff's potential encounter, and probably a great deal responsible for it. So what you're talking about, Sonia, was after Jeff's possible sighting. I mean, that sighting, I mean, you were there for the whole thing. You were right. In fact, you were the closest. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, again, I don't like pulling punches. There was a Sasquatch there, a Sasquatch that Jeff Meldrum saw, and you were the closest to that Sasquatch, were you not?
Yes.
So you know, it was
the first time, and I think, even though I actually don't think this had to do with the fear, because, again, I wasn't afraid when I walked out to the border of the woods where we were. When I walked out to that part, I wasn't afraid. However, whatever was close to me definitely was not happy or was in a defensive position that I was there because of the way I responded. Yes. It was a very interesting encounter. But again, you know, it's so funny about this too, about the thing about being taken. At that moment, in both times, when we were in the U.S. and when we were in Canada, and I was with Jeff, and I was with you out in the U.S., like both times, absolutely 1,000% different experiences, but knowing that I'm standing right next to something that's huge, mm-hmm. and knowing that I'm completely vulnerable, and neither one of them struck. That's what's mm-hmm. so compelling, right? I mean, you know, Todd, you heard what I heard mm-hmm. in the U.S., right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you were right. You were, what, 25, maybe 50 feet behind me? You're a good ways behind me at this point. Mm-hmm. And you could hear and feel what I heard.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and it not only happened, it happened a couple of times. And at that point, you know, at that point, I was so vulnerable that if either one of them had meant to do harm, it would have happened right then. It wouldn't have been that hard. it wouldn't have been difficult at all.
What's frustrating for me is, I think the Montana, the positive success that we had there was because that was the result of days and days of being there, of you, having previous getting close to them on a couple other occasions and then ending with that really, really close encounter. Problem was in the Nordegg research site, that was it. It was that day. There was no follow-up. You go home, Jeff goes home. And that's the problem with this whole research that really is frustrating to me, as I know if I had you guys out there for extended lengths of time, I mean, Jeff had this success in, you know, 3 days and three nights. He had this kind of incredible, even all the other stuff that happened it's amazing to have this kind of success. I mean, can you, either one of you, imagine 2, 3, 6 months out in these areas?
Right. Yeah.
What we would do would just be, it would be unprecedented, it'd be incredible. And that's why Jeff and I are doing this radio show. That's why you're on the radio, Sonia. That's why I do this big production is, you know, I want to have big funding to take this to the next level, to get us all out in the field and continue on. Because it's, even I'm doing the post-production of the film right now, and it's so frustrating to think, my God, like, look at the sex. And it's 3 days. I have 3 days worth of footage with you, Jeff, and that's it. Yeah. And you went home.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it almost seems kind of ridiculous. Why would you go home? if you're having, but we have a life, we have bills to pay, we have, you know, commitments
exactly.
that we have to adhere to.
Yeah.
And people will chastise us for looking for the funding or working for the funding. I don't even call it, it's not even a business to me in any way, shape, or form. This is, how could you think about monetary gain when you're confronted with such a profound discovery and so close to it on so many levels? To me, the finances is just a tool to go out there and do what we need to do to get this done. So, very exciting stuff.
Yeah. You know, Sonia, yeah. you're... I was just going to say, you know, your experience, it raises an interesting issue, one that we can really only speculate about, but some informed speculation within the framework of known behaviors, just as we've been talking in terms of abduction or child snatching, in terms of behavioral frameworks of other analogies with non-human primates and great apes. And that's this experience of fear, of intense fear that you had. You know, I've talked with stalwart outdoorsmen, you know, intrepid hunters who were reduced to hot butter by their experience. You know, they swear they'll never go back into that area to hunt again. They never go into the field unless they're armed any longer. And I'd ask myself, what would invoke such a visceral, such a fundamental response of fear in these experienced outdoorsmen? And pardon me, my voice is really bad tonight, but you know, and I explore some of the possibilities in my book under the chapter on vocalizations and this notion of infrasound, the ability to project these infrasonic frequencies that evoke physiological responses in animals that can disorient or stun a prey when emitted by a predator. And it's fascinating that the great apes have the plumbing. They have the extra laryngeal air sacs that would be absolutely logical as organs that are capable of or are necessary in the generation and projection of this kind of infrasonic vocalization. You know, recently it's gotten popularized with this notion of being blasted, whether it's with infrasound or with some psychic blast of energy or whatever, you know, and I don't know. I'm not going to comment on the likelihood or the probability of one over the other. You know, I think that there is some evidence, there's some analogies that can be drawn to the anatomy of the great ape respiratory tract and the use of loud calls and vocalizations in their behavior that suggests that maybe that's at the root of this otherwise inexplicable fear that can be. And that can be a defensive or it can be an aggressive behavior. In this case, I think you're right. I mean, if what I think I saw and the associated footprints that we may have identified in that area would suggest a juvenile or young adult, not of one of extremely large size. You know, your very courageous and calm approach might have actually been unsettling rather than calming for this individual.
Yeah, absolutely. When I remember too, I remember telling you, Sonia, take one more step forward, and I saw your leg move forward, and I saw a leg shaking. I saw fear at that moment that was really profound and unnerving. But you know, if you do what you need to do. You had to take a step forward. If you're not gonna take that step forward when the time asks for, go back to, you know, go be a carpenter, go be a plumber, whatever it's going to take. So, yeah, when we come back, we're going to go to a break right away. But when we come back, I'd like Sonia to talk a little more about even what followed. Because, you know, she left, she went back, and she spoke with my wife. She came back to my house for a bit before she went back to California. And I wasn't there for any of that. And the fear and the adrenaline that you had, let's talk about that when we come back next on Bigfoot North Radio.
Very good.
Okay.
Streaming live.
the leader in Internet talk radio. VoiceAmerica.com.
The Jane Goodall Institute is an organization dedicated to continuing to protect critical habitat for chimpanzees and other great apes in Africa. To work with and empower African communities to improve their lives, and to encourage young people around the world to take positive action for the planet. Go to janegoodall.org to sign a petition, get educated, and help to ensure great apes have a future on our amazing planet. That's janegoodall.org.
The Complete Sylvanic Collection is an online download featuring videos, stills, chronicles, and audio collected by Todd Standing. It is an enormous collection of some of the most significant evidence ever recorded. Visit sylvanic.com or bigfootnorth.com to see these downloads, video footage, and to find out more about Todd's work. You can also find the Bigfoot North products for sale in the online store. Our sightings are just the beginning. Visit sylvanic.com or bigfootnorth.com and see what you're missing. Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Bigfoot North. If you have a comment about our program or a question for Todd Standing or Dr. Jeff Meldrum, please send an email to info@bigfootnorth.com. That's info@bigfootnorth.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Todd Standing here with Jeff Meldrum and Sonia Zohar. And I'll say this is something we need to talk about, because as I was just explaining to Jeff and Sonia, when Sonia, after the incident and after Jeff was explaining what he'd seen, my camera doesn't have the audio for that. So it's not going to be anywhere. It's only going to be here right now. Sonia, tell us about precisely what transpired, what you were thinking, how you felt after that confrontation that we had.
Well, it was really interesting because we had hiked back into a place that you had been told previously not to hike back in by some hunters who got chased out of that area. Mm-hmm. And so we had hiked in there that day, and we actually didn't find any evidence, but it was the space where you were told not to go. And right. We went there anyway, because that's exactly where they would be, and we knew why they were so afraid. So, but then what happened was, is because of our presence that night, of course, we hear them. And one of the sounds was very close to camp. And so I walked out. You asked me if I wanted to go. And that was really nice. You invited me to go. It wasn't like I had to go, but you invited me to, because again, this is it wasn't even a full moonish night. I think it was more of a new moonish night. So it was very, very dark and very, very quiet. And I walked out to where we heard the sound, and I started to do my thing and talk and you know, really open the space for it to come closer and not to hide and not to be afraid. And while I was standing there, the most unusual thing happened, and that was I looked down and I noticed that my knees were shaking. And the odd thing, and I want to really make this point, because fear, in my experience in my life, usually happens where, like, you're upstairs in your bedroom and you hear something in the kitchen downstairs and no one's supposed to be home, so you heard a noise and then you become afraid. But what happened in this instance is that Todd asked me if I wanted to go, and that was another great thing you said, you know, we're here for it, right? So Todd asked me if I wanted to do it, and I go, well, you bought the ticket, honey, you better take the ride. So I got up and I walked out to the edge, and I really wasn't afraid. I was a little bit cautious, you know, obviously, again, because it was in the dark of night. But I wasn't necessarily afraid. But as I stood there talking to where we heard the call, I looked down and my knees were just, like, beyond control. Like, they were shaking. And I remember looking down at my knees and thinking, wow, you're scared. and then I got to coach myself. I was like, hey, you're okay though. You're fine. You know, you don't have to, I know you're scared, but you're safe. So just be present. And I kept doing what I was doing, and then at some point, I wasn't getting a response, but the physical fear in my body was building, so I pulled back, and I came back into camp, and I sat down. And what followed, I must admit, is probably one of the most bizarre experiences, you know, in my life, is that even talking about it now, it makes me short of breath. And so I noticed that I was physically exhausted. The next day, the muscles in my legs were sore. I was physically exhausted. I was leaving the next day, so I went to Todd's house first before I flew out of Canada. And his wife and I tried to do things to relax. Like we did a hot tub for 3 hours. I had a couple of glasses of wine. I still really couldn't feel relaxed. And then when I got home to the States, I noticed even for like 10 days, it was exactly 10 days that if I would just get up from a chair and walk across the room, I would be short of breath. And so I actually did see a doctor about this, and wanted to make sure that I was okay, because maybe I had a virus or something. I'm not really even sure. And then when I explained to her what had happened, she said that basically what I confronted in the woods tapped into the most primal of fears, and I was experiencing a shutdown in my body due to fear, and that it triggered. That experience triggered almost every fear that I've ever known, because all of my pulses were down. Everything was down. She goes, everything's beating slow. Everything's low. She goes, just rest. You're going to be fine. But that, in her opinion, if that's what happened, is that it had triggered my deepest fear. And what's really interesting is, even talking about it now, and let's be honest, I have to take deep breaths. I'm still not daunted by it. I know what it is, and I know that it's that experience happened. But again, it's so interesting. I don't feel like I was personally threatened. I think it just comes from what Dr. Mulder was just saying. I think he's accurate. I think maybe they do have infrasound. Because of the fact that the way the fear actually hit me in my body, and it wasn't in my head until afterwards. But it is I'm having a strange physiological reaction to even recounting the story. And I have, every single time I've told the story, I have the same reaction. I get shortness of breath, that I have to like stretch my neck up to breathe, because there is a certain amount of fear. And that's why I said, when I hear these hunters saying they'll never go back, they'll never do it again, I believe them. And, you know, and then this is kind of funny, Todd. I remember when you first spoke, and you told me all of these things to be afraid of. And I remember saying, okay, Todd, look, I may not know how to work a compass, but I definitely know how to wear the pins. Not thinking that I would ever need them, but I have to tell you, I may need them, you know? I've heard some stories of some, you know, Todd, I can't even imagine. We talk about, you know, this fear, when it was really just I don't even call it a standoff. He was just close to me, and maybe he got defensive, or maybe he was being aggressive, maybe because I didn't back down, and they're so used to people backing down when they do that, and I didn't. Maybe it made him even more, I don't know, do the infrasound more, or whatever it is, or whatever that experience was. But, you know, I can't imagine. I know there's that time, Todd, where you had the flare out and you had them around you and you're calling them off because you couldn't handle it anymore. Mm-hmm. It is a really, really frightening process. They're highly intelligent. And like we've said before, we don't have the defenses against them. I mean, I don't know if people understand in general. Now, I know a lot of people who deal with primates and monkeys, like not the ape family, if they even understand how strong these creatures are. Like, I was down in I was down in the Amazon camping and for like 19 days, and I stayed with a tribe of native people, and the head shaman medicine man actually had a monkey. And this is when I learned my most respect for a non-human primate. Is this monkey, I don't know if they had it as a pet. I mean, I didn't speak their language. I didn't know if it was a pet, if they were going to eat it, but they had it on a leash and a collar, and I asked if I could hold it. And he was only about a foot tall, and a very long, prehensile tail. It wasn't a spider monkey, and it wasn't a howler. I'm not sure what kind it was. And he was a young male, and the gentleman said, yes, of course, you could hold it. And so I sat him in my lap, and I knew, you know, every culture has a different way of handling their, quote, pets. And I knew this little guy had not been groomed or had not been really cared for in a nurturing way. And so I put him in my lap, and I started grooming him. And I thought at the time that I was doing this monkey a favor, you know, by just showing him a little love and nurturing. And he literally passed out in my lap with his head turned on my knee and his jaw open, and he was drooling. He was so in heaven with me just pretending like I was, you know, getting little bugs off of him and grooming him and doing what you see primates do. Then, you know, about an hour passed, we were sitting in circles and talking, and then it was time for me to go. And I am not exaggerating, it took four people to get this monkey off of me. Now, he didn't hurt me at all, but every time one hand would be moved, a foot would grab, and every time that foot would grab, then the prehensile tail would grab, and every time, it took four people plus myself to get him off of me. He did not want me to leave. And I've never felt strength like that. That was stronger than any human. I couldn't believe the strength that little tiny monkey had. It was incredible.
Well, it's been said that a chimpanzee has the strength, an adult male chimpanzee has the strength of five men at least.
At least.
Their anatomy and physiology of their musculature is really quite amazing. Hey, if I may, just to kind of help to close off here, we have just a few minutes remaining. If I could just switch gears just a minute, because obviously one of the themes that we wanted to touch on here tonight was, you know, this tradition that seems to have developed of as was mentioned, Leakey's Angels or Leakey's Ladies, as that was called on stage. I did a little digging, and I found a list of things that Leakey had listed as characteristics that he was looking for in his proteges, in Jane and Diane and Baruti. And here they are. And then maybe we can think about those as we part, if these are qualities that we might all cultivate as we're doing field research. It said, women read social cues and observe nature differently than men. They pay strong attention to small details that can lead to important answers to big questions. This one, I'm not quite sure if this is true or not. Women's minds are more uncluttered and unbiased by existing theory. As mothers, human females must have some kind of programming to comprehend the needs and wants of small creatures that can't speak. Traditionally, women have been the peacemakers, an important reality in the sometimes violent world of primate social culture. Leakey believed that women would appear less threatening to the male-dominated ape communities they observed. And finally, men, observed Leakey, seek to conquer nature and rarely exhibit the patience and attention span to study the same community over an extended period of time. Men want to conquer the subject in a comparatively short time and move on to something else. I know I'm guilty of that. I'm not a very good fisherman. If I don't catch a fish in 5 minutes, I have to move on to some other spot. So patience is a virtue to be, certainly in any field studies, is a virtue to be cultivated.
Absolutely. Well, and with our work, it'll be as simple as the cream rises to the top. And Sonia took that forefront. She's taken those brave steps forwards. When her legs were shaking and trembling, I told Sonia, I said, Sonia, you got to keep moving forward. You have to take another step. And she took another step. And she shivered and her legs were shaking and I could see her body just trembling in fear. And I said, another step, Sonia, just one more step. You can do it. And she did it. She took those steps. And it's easy for me to say, you can say, because I'm the one behind her and I'm the one saying, you know, move forward. But, you know, I act from patience and calm. And I knew that we could just a little bit closer. And we did make a line. We drew a line and we stopped. And so that's fantastic, Sonia. We're pretty much coming to the end of our show here. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been wonderful having you. What's the future for you real quick? What do you want to do? What's your goal with the Sasquatch stuff?
Well, I'll just say this. Since we mentioned Leakey's Angels, had Leakey asked me if I had been in the position of Jane Goodall, if I had been in the position of Diane Fossey, he came to me and said, hey, would you do this? In a heartbeat.
And that's what we're here to do now. So, Next week, who's on? Jeff?
Dr. Jim Halfpenny. He's an acclaimed tracker. PhD in wildlife biology. He runs the Naturalist's World, which includes a tracking school in Gardner, Montana. This is the individual that I recently collaborated with in holding a weekend workshop, which included discussions and evaluations of Sasquatch tracks, along with that of other quadrupeds. Such as bears, cougars, and wolves, which are his first loves, and so he'll be talking with us about how to evaluate footprint evidence, the nature of footprint evidence. He'll also, since he's done extensive wildlife studies, his perspective on our ineffectualness at finding that ineffectualness at finding solid field data and documenting the presence of these creatures, his perspective will be a very valuable one. I think he'll have some important insights to share.
Fantastic. So stay tuned for next week. Thank you very much, everybody. And we'll see you next week on Bigfoot North Radio.
Thank you again for listening to Bigfoot North. Please join Todd Standing and Dr. Jeff Meldrum again next Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll have another part of the story then.